Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We're free. Finally. Free now. Free to bump elbows again now. Free to finally see Mom, Dad, Gran, even that weird uncle now. Free to escape the news, finally say I do, or even a first, hey you, now. Free to go north side, south side, or even the seaside and be free as a city seagull now. Free to... Now. There's nothing like the feeling of being free now. Ready? Book a ride now with Free Now. And with Ireland's shortest wait times, we're always ready.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point. After a quite incredible Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, with me this morning is Finlay Provolda from Planet F1 Planet. Finlay, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm good. I'm worn out after all the chaos of yesterday. I mean, there's just something about Italy these days, isn't there? Yeah, obviously, Imola's got, it's got great history as a racetrack, but I was a bit concerned about coming here this year because overtaking's so difficult. But yeah, it didn't turn out to be a problem, did it? I mean, we got that rain right at the start of the day, which really kind of made things interesting. And then, yeah, it all kind of took off from there.
Absolutely. If qualifying wasn't good enough, then the race certainly it went above and beyond even that. It was a great qualifying session on Saturday, and then the race just followed through even further, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, the whole weekend there was a lot to be excited about. And I mean, that's what happens when you have two cars at the front that are pretty even, driven by two genuine world-class drivers, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and they didn't disappoint either. And like Verstappen against Hamilton, I think it sort of all got started off the line, didn't it? It was a really ballsy start from Verstappen to force his way through.
Yeah, I mean he's renowned for his abilities in the wet weather and the changing conditions. He always seems to be able to find grip where no one else can, and I think that was the case again immediately. You know, I mean, not only did he absolutely fly off the line to take the lead, but I mean he pulled away by 4 seconds pretty much immediately. You know, I mean, Hamilton obviously eventually, you know, he kind of closed that gap again, but it took him a lot longer to get to grips with things than it did for Verstappen, I think.
Absolutely, and you know, coming together at Tamburello as well, Verstappen wasn't afraid to get his elbows out, and Hamilton had to go over the sausage curbs at the start, which damaged his front wing end plate, and you'd have thought he'd have been more hampered than he was by that.
Yeah, for sure. I think I think probably the changing conditions helped him a bit, and that when it's wet, your car performance is less relevant. I think if you can control it, then you're probably going to be pretty golden anyway. But yeah, it was a mixed race for Hamilton, really, wasn't it? You'd say he drove pretty much as well as Verstappen, considering their machinery, apart from that one mistake that ultimately lost him the chance of a win, really. But yeah, I mean, it's just great, isn't it, to be able to see them go head to head.
Completely. I mean, it's not often that you see Lewis Hamilton make a mistake these days, and for not just him to do it, but to have the sort of presence of mind to sort of make sure he reverses out the gravel and gets himself back going again, that was a real key part of it, wasn't it, for him to get back on track. And obviously there was the red flag, which we'll come to in a bit, for him to be able to start that recovery drive.
Yeah, the recovery was just Hamilton at his best, I think. You know, these days we don't really get to see him go wheel to wheel with other cars enough, sadly. Well, not sadly for him. I'm sure he's not complaining. It's because he's so far ahead. But yeah, no, that is really cool to see. But I don't know. I think Verstappen edged it, didn't he, really? I mean, Hamilton was great, but he ultimately didn't have the perfect day. He made that mistake. And, well, that wasn't the case with Verstappen. I mean, that's perfect drive, really, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, bar that sort of minor twitch before the safety car restart, he's pretty flawless all day.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, like we said, he nailed the start, pulled away quickly. I think, yeah, there was maybe towards the end of the first stint, I think Hamilton maybe had a bit of an edge, but that was partly due to Verstappen getting stuck in traffic as well, to be fair. But yeah, I think it's once Hamilton made that mistake, I think it was kind of game over. And you never got the feeling that Verstappen was going to make that kind of mistake, I think. Obviously, he did look a bit dodgy under the safety car at one point, like you said. But I don't know, I never looked at him and worried that he was gonna crash it or go into the gravel or something, which I can't really say about any other driver, you know. In those conditions, I think he was the only one that I had full confidence would get it right.
Yeah, fully agreed there, to be fair. I think I think everyone had had some sort of issue on the day, didn't they? And for Verstappen to sort of work his way through that on a track where like some drivers were comparing it to almost being like Spa, where one sector was completely different weather-wise, and that was a massive, massive challenge for them all to get through it.
Yeah, it was. I think it's huge for Verstappen, to be honest, because, I mean, this is the first year that he's had an even car to Hamilton, maybe even a better car. He's had a car to challenge for a title. And I mean, before race day in Imola, things weren't really going that well. Obviously, he nailed qualifying at Bahrain, but then couldn't pull off the move in the race. And he didn't have a good qualifying in Imola, you know, P3 beaten by Hamilton and Perez. So, yeah, I think there were probably a lot of questions of Verstappen going into the race. His reputation is so, so big that the pressure that comes with it is huge. And yeah, I think this was the first time this season he really showed that he can handle it and that he can take the fight to, well, one of the best drivers ever.
This will be the first time that he's been in this position. It makes me wonder if he'll be able to grow into it throughout the season. You know, he's been able to take Lewis Hamilton on head-to-head and beat him in a race where almost everyone else was completely falling by the wayside. So for him, that must be an enormous confidence boost.
100%. I think it definitely is. You know, I think, it's daunting, isn't it? Going up against Hamilton when you've had no experience of a title fight before. It's so easy to forget how young Verstappen is. It feels like he's been in F1 for so long, you know, because he came in 2015 when he was 17, but he is still very young. And yeah, I reckon this race probably did make him feel a lot better about his title chances. I don't know, who's your money on at this point?
Honestly, do not know, which I suppose is the beauty of it, really, isn't it? Because it's such a long calendar ahead of us. And, you know, we could be going race to race and just seeing what happens. I mean, I'm thinking that this almost has shades of 2005 about it, doesn't it? The seven-time world champion against the young pretender with Michael Schumacher and Fernando Alonso. And, you know, again, a sort of seminal race at Imola, wasn't it? Alonso defending from Schumacher. And obviously it was completely different circumstances, yes, on Sunday. But it was... yeah, it was just a crazy, crazy race. And we've got a really good year ahead of us if it stays like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm thinking back a lot to 2017 and 2018 at the moment, you know, where Vettel had even machinery to Hamilton and made a really good start to the season. But once it got to the business end of things, he crumbled under the pressure, didn't he? Whereas Hamilton thrived. And I think that's going to make or break it. I think Verstappen does have the car this year. I don't think there's going to be much development either. So I'd say that Verstappen is going to have a better car than Hamilton all season. So it's all on him, really, because I think that you can safely say Hamilton's going to get everything out of that car.
And more at times, probably.
Yeah, and more. And I don't think he's going to make many major mistakes. I think yesterday was probably one of the few he'll make. So I think it all comes down to Verstappen, doesn't it? How he can handle that pressure. Because as Vettel showed in 2018, you know, I mean, Vettel crashed in Germany and that kind of put an end to his title fight altogether. I don't think Verstappen can afford a mistake like that. So, yeah, pressure's on him rather than Hamilton, I'd say.
Especially as Hamilton's sort of been there and done it. But it's even though it was really eventful at the front as well for Hamilton and Verstappen, their teammates had a completely different story, didn't they?
Yes, let's start off with Perez because, it will leave the listeners in suspense about our views on the Bottas-Russell collision. But, yeah, Perez was... It's a shame, isn't it? I mean, I think everyone wants to see him do well. In the first race weekend, he had a poor Saturday, but a great Sunday. And this time round, it was the other way around. I mean, he was awesome in qualifying, I think. You know, got P2 ahead of Verstappen, which I certainly didn't expect. I don't think anybody expected that. I mean, he could have taken pole on Saturday as well, actually. Then Sunday, yeah, from the off, it wasn't going well, really. I think he made a poor start to drop behind Leclerc. And then, yeah, he couldn't even keep up with Leclerc, which was worrying. I think he did have a steering issue at that point. I think his steering wheel was loose.
He did, yeah. He said it was sort of moving around of its own accord, wasn't it? So he was fighting against the car as well at that point.
Yeah. So I don't know. At that point, I think, you know, P4, until you can change your steering wheel, that's, you know, it's not too bad. But then obviously he made that rookie error under the safety car, which a driver of his experience shouldn't really be making, I don't think. I mean, it's pretty simple if you can't overtake under the safety car, you know. And
that's it.
He did. You know, even if you make a mistake, you still can't overtake. But then he got so many chances, didn't he, though? I mean, you looked at that, you thought, oh, that's probably ruined his race. But then the red flag came out, and he got another chance. He was in P4 at the restart in the fastest car on the grid. You know, at that point, you're looking at it and you're thinking, this is a dead-on Red Bull 1-2 here, especially with Hamilton back in P9 at that point, I think. So, and then, yeah, he another mistake. And just not a good day.
That's it. He drops it at the Villeneuve chicane for anyone who didn't see it. And he from then on, it was just damage limitation for him. But he couldn't get back into the points after that, which will be extremely disappointing.
It's exactly what Red Bull don't want. You know, they need a driver who can, you know, I think they expect Verstappen to be the lead driver, whoever they have alongside him, you know, unless they could get Hamilton to join, which is never going to happen. I think Verstappen's always going to be their best driver. They just need someone to pick up the pieces behind them, you know, pick up the big points, because especially with Bottas crashing out, you know, that was such an opportunity for Red Bull to get a bit of a, well, to get a lead in the Constructors' Championship. And he didn't take it for them, really, which, yeah, it's a shame. But I still think he's shown enough in the first two race weekends to justify their decision to sign him ahead of Albon. I mean, he out-qualified Verstappen in his second race, in which Gasly and Albon never did, you know, unless Verstappen had issues. So, yeah, I don't think it's a case of, oh, no, what have Red Bull done? This was a shocker of the call. Quite yet.
Not again.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, he does need to cut out those errors for sure.
And, you know, lest we forget, you know, it's only his second race in the team. It's the first time for him driving the car in the wet at the same time as well. So obviously that is going to take a period of adjustment. But, you know, you're one of the best drivers in the world if you're on that grid. So you'd hope he'd be able to adjust to that too.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at Turkey last year, they were pretty, I know there wasn't rain, but there was zero grip. There might have even been a bit of rain. I can't remember, it was so long ago. But it was so cold that there was just zero grip on the track. And he was one of the best, you know, along with Hamilton. I think him and Hamilton were the only two that didn't really put a foot wrong. I mean, you know, Verstappen crashed trying to overtake Perez. So I did head into this thinking that he's got what it takes to keep things tidy in these conditions. But to be fair, I think it's a very, very hard car to drive as it is, that Red Bull. And when it's in difficult conditions in your second race, it's going to be even harder.
Yeah, exactly. And and now we come to the fun bit, don't we? For anyone who didn't see it, heading up to the Zambrella chicane, George Russell in his Williams was looking to overtake Valtteri Bottas, who was having a bad enough day anyway. And he went to try and go around the outside of Tamburello, dropped a wheel on the wet patch when he was on slicks, and all hell broke loose, didn't it?
Yeah, God, that's good fun. I mean, first of all, you just take a moment and listen to it. Like, George Russell was overtaking Valtteri Bottas. You know, I think a lot of people forget about that because of how dramatic the crash was and what happened afterwards. But just as a starting point, that is just crazy. You know, Bottas in a Mercedes that Hamilton cut through the midfield through easily after the red flag, that Hamilton was in second for beforehand. And yeah, Bottas was sat in, I think it was eighth at the time, maybe ninth.
Yeah, P9, yeah.
He didn't have any problems. And he got overtaken by Williams in George Russell. I mean, yeah, that first, you know, that's just crazy. I mean, we're talking about Perez having a poor race, but I think this is like another level altogether, you know. And there's a difference between making a mistake and just having zero pace in the first place.
It's almost like Albon Gasly syndrome, isn't it? He sort of hampered by qualifying anyway, and on a track where it's so narrow, and you know, a bit of a mitigating factor could be the fact that it was just so much wetter at that stage of the race, so there's a lot of spray and you're having to navigate that anyway without even trying to overtake people. But there was an amusing team radio message with Toto Wolff just coming on, just saying, come on Valtteri, just trying to give him the hurry up as much as he could, but for whatever reason he just couldn't do it. And as much as anything else, George Russell being able to close up behind him and try to overtake him, that's just symbolic if nothing else, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the main takeaway, to be honest, from it. The crash was a racing incident, I think. Personally, I think that Russell is completely out of line blaming Bottas. I've watched the replay so much, and I really don't think Bottas moves over to the right. Think maybe a tiny bit, but then he goes back to the left. But I mean, at the end, I think Russell got it wrong. You know, I don't think there was space there, especially in those conditions, to get, you know, if you get one wheel on the grass, you're done there. And he did. I think looking at that incident, I don't think Bottas was at fault. I think it was either a racing incident, or if anything, Russell was a bit too aggressive. And then, yeah, what happened afterwards was just, I thought that was really, really silly, really uncalled for, and really kind of disrespectful from Russell, to be honest. I mean, that was a huge collision for Bottas. And Russell just walked over to the car. I think everybody kind of thought, because, you know, we know Russell is quite a nice guy, respectful driver, very professional. Mm-hmm. I think everyone kind of thought he was going to walk over and see if Bottas was all right. And then he just slaps him on the helmet, asks him if Bottas was trying to kill them. I don't know what, I guess it was the adrenaline from the crash, but what he was thinking.
The thing is, you think that would be in the heat of the moment as well, and you'd hope he'd have been able to calm down by the time he was giving interviews afterwards. But no, he squarely blamed Valtteri Bottas for it, and he was talking about gentleman's agreement between the drivers that you don't move like that. And for a start, it didn't look like Bottas moved like that. And I do wonder if a part of that is Russell being appointed to sort of lead the Grand Prix Drivers Association, if he's trying to talk from that standpoint of being in that role, just trying to almost oversee driver behaviour on the track. And I mean, it could be sort of stupid enough as him just trying to put his point across from that point of view.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very political, to be honest, everything he's saying. Like you said, I think I'd let him off if he said afterwards, oh yeah, that was stupid of me. I was just, you know, annoyed at the time, but, you know, I've apologized to him. It was a racing incident or whatever, but he didn't. And I mean, there was a lot of time between the crash and a lot of his interviews afterwards as well. I mean, he crashed out about halfway through the race.
Yeah.
And he spoke to a lot of people after the race, you know, after a red flag as well. I mean, there was a good while for him to kind of think about it, calm down, watch replays, but he did not back down at all.
No.
And I think, yeah, that's partly, like you said, I think in his new role in the GPDA, he maybe, I don't know, thinks it's his responsibility to raise issues like that. But I mean, I still don't think there was much of an issue with Bottas. I think mainly it's him playing the game with Mercedes, isn't it? He wants to put pressure on Bottas. He wants to make Bottas look as bad as possible so that he can get into that seat. But I'm not sure this is the right approach to take.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not going to endear him to many people at Mercedes if he's taking out one of their drivers. But for the first time, we've heard that mask slip, didn't we? When he said maybe if it was another driver, he wouldn't have done it. Which is the first real indicator, because everyone's been talking about those two, that 2022 seat, but they've not really addressed it themselves. But that's the first time in public that that George Russell has said, you know, albeit underhandedly, that I've got my eyes on that seat, I want it. And obviously he doesn't want to give it up.
Yeah, I mean, it really smashed the doors open on that issue. I mean, even Toto Wolff was not really dancing around it afterwards, was he? He said, you know, he's been joking with Russell about, you know, if Russell drives well, he can have the Mercedes. If not, he'll end up in a Renault Clio. You know, I think I was kind of surprised, actually. I thought Wolf was going to be, it was a racing incident between two drivers. That's all I have to say. But I think his comments did make me think that maybe Bottas's time is pretty much done already. You know, I mean, I think Toto said as well that Bottas was going backwards at the moment, which I think is quite a strong comment for a team principal to say about his driver. And he wasn't that critical of Russell's actions afterwards. So, no. Yeah, I think it's not good news for Valtteri, really.
Only two races in as well. That's not going to do a lot for him personally either, is it? He's not going to be as motivated to try and get the job done if he already knows, like, or that there are hints that the writing might be on the wall for him already.
Yeah, I mean, it should be fun for us at least, because I can't see him. I can't see him being his usual obedient self if he's getting the same signals that we're getting. You know, I think if he's thinking, well, they've already made their mind up, they're getting rid of me. I mean, where is the incentive for him to just be a team player? There isn't really any. You know, it's kind of like Vettel last year at Ferrari. Why would he be a team player when, you know, when he's leaving? and I mean, I think that's very bad for Mercedes, because it comes at a time when they need him more than ever, really, you know?
Especially for the Constructors' Championship, you know, in that context, now that Max Verstappen has a more reliable teammate, well, most of the time, other than yesterday in Sergio Perez.
Yeah, I mean, better teammate and better car, I think. This year, Red Bull have got a car to challenge Mercedes, and they've got two top drivers. So, you know, for the first time in a while, because the Mercedes have really had that issue. I mean, obviously, Ferrari built a good car in 2017 and 2018, but they had one driver in Kimi Raikkonen who was a bit of a passenger in that title fight. He was a rear gunner, even more so than Bottas in a lot of ways. Whereas this year, we've got a car that challenges Mercedes again, but you've also got two drivers who can do so. I think that Perez will be able to as he gets more comfortable in that car. So, yeah, they really need Bottas, and I'm not sure that they're gonna have his full kind of support as a team player, to be honest. I mean, ultimately, that might be irrelevant if he keeps driving the way he is anyway. He's not going to be in a position to help out Hamilton regardless.
Exactly, and that's going to be one of the stories of the season, you'd imagine, just with all that bubbling along in the background, even with Hamilton and Verstappen jostling for the title. I mean, obviously, in race situations where they might be out of place and Bottas and Perez maybe further forward, that could be a real key factor in both championships.
Yeah, it could be. It definitely could be. It's good fun, though, isn't it? You know, it's good. It's good for the title fight, and It just makes things a lot more interesting when you look at, like, Russell's season as well now. I think, yeah, like you said, now that the mask has slipped and he's made his intentions abundantly clear, I don't think there's any real incentive to kind of go back on that now. I thought his chance to kind of cool things down and say it was just a crash, you know, I overreacted. It's not relevant about the context of me and Bottas. It was just two drivers hitting each other. That's about it. I'm not thinking about that Mercedes seat. The chance to say that was after the race. And he, like we said, he had time to think about it and he decided not to do that. So I think this is going to be something that is pretty openly discussed for the rest of the season now, which is kind of strange, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I bet he's not looking forward to his press conferences in Portimao already. I do wonder if he's woken up this morning with a little sense of regret over what he said.
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, I was so surprised by it, you know. I was, you know, the whole reaction of hitting Bottas on the head and calling him all sorts and stuff. That's pretty normal, you know, driving. I mean, maybe not the slap on the helmet. That, you don't see that often, but, you know, I don't think it's not a massive deal, but it becomes much bigger when the guy goes to the press afterwards and has zero regrets. Zero about what he did, you know, still feels that he was completely justified in his actions. I think then it becomes quite a big deal. And yeah, now it has. So bring it on.
Absolutely. Away from the top two, it was a great race behind them, wasn't it? And full props to Lando Norris for getting that podium too. He had a brilliant weekend overall.
Yeah. I mean, surprising me, to be honest. I think everyone knows he's a great young driver, but I thought with Ricciardo alongside him, he would struggle. I mean, Ricciardo's a top driver. You know, he's won races, countless podiums. I mean, yeah, I thought that Norris would end up playing second fiddle, but the first two races, he's comfortably had the mark over him. And yeah, I think this race in particular. I mean, you know, obviously qualifying, he was absolutely rapid. There was a point where I thought he was going to get pole position. I couldn't believe what I was watching. He said,
same here.
Yeah, he set purple sector one, purple sector two. I was like, oh my God. Obviously went wide, got his lap time deleted. The time would have gotten P3 ahead of Verstappen. So, yeah, I think he was gutted about that, wasn't he? You could see it. But, I mean, clearly he used that to channel it on race day because he was every bit as good and, yeah, didn't make those mistakes.
No, not at all. But we spoke about Bottas but not being a team player, but you have to give Ricciardo some credit for actually moving over when the team asked him to. And he said over the race, after the race, that he had to swallow his pride a bit to do it. But at the same time, he said, you know, still second race in a new car, still learning, still learning where everything is, you know, trying to pick things up from when he moved from Renault. So, you know, like fair play to him for doing that, because I don't think everyone would have done.
No, I wasn't sure he would either. He's never been a driver like Bottas or like, you know, Raikkonen or Barrichello back in the day, who's just going to move aside. And yeah, without any kind of title fight, I wondered, you know, what's his incentive of letting him through? But it was great for the team that he did, because obviously he let Norris go and Norris had the pace to ultimately pick up a podium. And with how hard it is to overtake, I think if Ricciardo didn't let Norris through, I don't think he would have gotten that podium. I think Leclerc probably would have finished ahead of him instead. So, yeah, it was a great team play from Ricciardo. I think that's exactly what you want from a lineup. I think you've got two guys who are pretty pretty relaxed. You know, I don't think there's any kind of bad blood between them. There's not too much. I don't think either of them want to play any kind of political game with each other. I think they're two guys who see it as they're going to be in this team for quite a long time. So let's try and build it up as much as possible, which, yeah, I think that's a really good place for McLaren to be in, especially when I think Ricciardo, we all know, is going to get to that. He's going to get more comfortable in the car and is going to be, you know, really, really good, as he has been everywhere he's gone. He's a world-class driver. The question mark was whether Norris is as well. And I think this season, I think he showed that he has. I mean, you know, two races in, he's third in the Drivers' Championship, I'm pretty sure.
27 points, P3 and P4.
Yeah. I mean, it's really impressive stuff. Second podium already. And yeah, I think he's taken his reputation to new heights already.
Absolutely, and with the pair of them as well, it's probably easier for them to get on with each other when they're both trying to drive the team forward. Because I mean, obviously, McLaren have made so much progress in the last year or two, and in the first two races of the season have only confirmed that. So it's in the best interest of the team for them to both be pushing in the same direction. And you know, on the early evidence, they seem to be doing that.
Yeah, it's never ideal having these issues with, you know, Ferrari last year. I think they had all those problems with Vettel and that he knew he was leaving. So he probably wasn't giving his all. I think they were probably building a car mainly for Leclerc, and that reflected, you know, they didn't have two drivers that did well. But yeah, McLaren have got exactly that this year. I think, like I said, once Ricciardo gets to grips with it, I think looking at how Norris is driving, you've got to think that's maybe the best lineup on the grid, depending, I think, on how Perez does it, Red Bull. And then, I mean, the Ferrari lineup, we'll get onto that in a sec, but that's not bad either. But yeah, I think once Ricciardo is more comfortable in the car, then McLaren are going to, yeah, they'll be well in the mix for podiums, maybe even a race win if you get a bit of chaos ahead of them.
Absolutely, and that's what we want to see, really, isn't it? And it's so tight between them and Ferrari at the moment. And it's good to see Ferrari make those sort of improvements from last year, because last year was so bad for them. So for them to pick themselves up again has been a good sign, not just for them, but for, you know, the sport as a whole, because like Formula One needs a good Ferrari, as is the as is the word around the paddock, isn't it?
Oh, I absolutely love seeing McLaren and Ferrari going head to head again. You know, I know it's not at the front, I know it's not for wins and titles, but it's just so cool to see. Yeah, it's been so long, I think, since we've had both teams in even cars that aren't completely awful. you know, and yeah, it's just really cool to see. I think that the jump that Ferrari have made this year is seriously impressive, considering the regulations. You know, they were pretty much frozen. There's not much you could do with the car. I mean, it is really impressive. I think they've obviously improved their power unit. The only way was up in that department, to be fair.
Yeah, they were far and away the worst engine from last year, from the looks of things.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So I think that was definitely the big issue. And they've largely fixed it, you know. I think that it also helped having a number two driver who is happy to be there, you know, who isn't just completely done with driving a Ferrari like Vettel was last year, understandably, in his defense. But yeah, I think Sainz is, I think he's settled in at Ferrari a lot better than people thought. I thought that Leclerc was going to be wiping the floor with him early on, while he kind of got to grips with the car, but that hasn't been the case. And pre-season as well, and before the first race, Sainz was saying how he didn't feel comfortable in the car, and he didn't know how to drive it in different conditions and how to manage tires on it. And you know, I was there thinking, guy, he's really going to struggle here, but he hasn't. I mean, aside from the qualifying in Imola, he's been pretty much flawless. I mean, I say that he did make a lot of mistakes in the first half of the race, going into the gravel a number of times. But, you know, thankfully, Pierre Gasly was kindly holding everyone up behind him, so he didn't lose any places. And yeah, once things dried up, he got his head down, and ultimately he put quite a bit of pressure on Leclerc at the end, actually.
And that can only be good for Ferrari too, because I do think Carlos Sainz is a lot better than people give him credit for. And he spoke after the race there about how he's still learning, still trying to find his feet. And I think he's taking a real sort of analytical approach. He's spending a lot of time at Maranello and Fiorano. And he's trying to get his feet under the table. And I think that could pay off for him in the long run.
He's a bit like Perez, I think, in that he's not one of the most exciting drivers, I don't think. I don't think he's got that unbelievable raw speed that Verstappen and Hamilton have. He doesn't have he's not an unbelievably good overtaker like Ricciardo is. But I think he's just really solid in every department. He doesn't have a weakness. And on Sundays especially, he's always said it, he's better on Sundays. And I think he showed that so far. You know, I mean, going up to P5 from P11 on the grid is a really good effort. And it's what the team needs. I mean, I don't know. Do you reckon he could beat Leclerc this year?
I mean, I don't know if he's going to out-qualify him very much, because Leclerc is so good on Saturdays. But I think, given the right conditions in the race, I think he would definitely give him a good run for his money, won't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he finished, a second odd behind Leclerc, yeah. I think. And yeah. I think it was a bit quicker, actually, after the red flag. I think he could have got him if Leclerc didn't have that DRS ahead from Norris for so long. So, yeah, I think that's... It's an interesting battle to watch. I think it means that McLaren really need Ricciardo to get comfortable in that car soon, because at the moment McLaren are ahead in the constructors, but the gap isn't big. The performance between the two cars is pretty even. So yeah, I think, and at the moment Ferrari have two drivers that are performing really well. So I think that Ricciardo needs to do that as well. And then, you know, I think we should have a really good fight for P3 on our hands. I mean, you know, it's fun. You'd think that maybe we'd be a bit disappointed that it's only a two-horse race this year for P3 rather than last year where we had Racing Point, Renault and McLaren. But I think the fact that it's Ferrari just completely makes up for that, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to see that competition throughout the grid. I mean, obviously 2022 will throw everything up in the air, but I think we can enjoy the last year of these regulations for sure. And, you know, finishing P3 will do sort of wonders for teams in terms of prize money as well. That can make such a big difference come the end of the season. So it'll be really interesting to see how that unfolds.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think that having two the two teams that are top of the midfield are two teams with big resources as well, you know, in Ferrari and McLaren, especially Ferrari. You know, they've got enough to be able to challenge Mercedes and Red Bull if they can build the car. So I think seeing them both, you know, build really good cars for this season is definitely encouraging going forward to 2022.
Yeah, and now, looking at the rest of the midfield, Pierre Gasly, you've touched on him already, but he must have felt like he had an entire season in one race. He was one of the only drivers to start on the full wet tyres, absolutely fell down to the back of the field, and after the red flag, he was able to work his way back up to P7, so it was a quite incredible race for him.
I kind of forgot about him with everything that was happening ahead of him. I mean, I saw him start on the wet in a really good qualifying position after a great Saturday. P5 he started. And then I saw him plummet down. I think he went all the way down to P15 before pitting because they made the wrong call with the tyres, basically. And weirdly, they didn't decide to pit him under the first lap safety car, which was, yeah, not the best call on AlphaTauri's part. But yeah, at that point you think that that's his race done, he's not going to be getting points, but yeah, I mean, it was quite the comeback drive, you know, to fight your way up from the way at the back of the grid to end up well in the points in the end. I mean, he was right behind Ricciardo and Stroll ahead of him. He could have got P6 with maybe 10 more laps in him, you know, but even so, P8 when you've dropped that far down is, it's a pretty darn good drive, I'd say.
Yeah, he really did have a tough time of it. But I think it exemplified how his drive went, because his teammate, obviously, Yuki Tsunoda was making headlines in Bahrain. But at the same time, he did have a bit of a tougher weekend. And then when I was starting at the back after going out and qualifying, and it didn't really get much better for him in the race.
No, I mean, it's strange. He did impress in the race for me. The first half of the race, I thought he was great. He obviously started right at the back, but fought his way all the way up into the points. Showed really strong pace, clean overtaking, no issues. You know, at that point, I'm thinking he's in contention for driver of the day if he keeps going at this rate. But then, yeah, another big mistake like the one he made in qualifying, just lost it at the restart. And crashed into the wall. Obviously he's a rookie. In those conditions, being a rookie, you can't be too harsh on him. I think Mick Schumacher made a mistake as well, and Nikita Mazepin didn't, but he was going so slowly that I think that
Well, he did spin at the end, you know, we need to tick that box.
Well, there you go then. Yeah, three rookies, three crashes. I mean, in these conditions, I think you've got to kind of let them off. But Helmut Marko is not the most patient man in the world, so I think Tsunoda is going to have to cut these out.
What gave you that impression? but at the same time, you know, it's good seeing that they've got a strong car, and Pierre Gasly started the season really well too. So AlphaTauri could be in with a shout of an outside shout being in that P3 fight if they can sort of like muster a couple of good races and just make sure they're there or thereabouts too.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of outright pace, I think they're well in there with Ferrari and McLaren, actually. I think a lot of, well, me included, are kind of forgetting that, because you look at the standings and the results of the first two races and you think, you know, there's not much to say about them. But in terms of outright pace, they are definitely in the mix. You know, Gasly's qualified in the top five in the first two races. Tsunoda has made a lot of progress from further back in the field in two races, even if he crashed in the second. They just need a race without any kind of, a race weekend even, without any kind of problems, whether it's crashes from Tsunoda or issues for Gasly that he's had in both races so far. Because, yeah, like you said, in terms of a car, they're definitely the fifth fastest car. They might even be... It's hard to tell because they haven't had a clean weekend, but they could be well up there with Ferrari and McLaren, I think. So, yeah, we could get a three-horse race from P3 after all.
Again, good for all of us, because it just means we don't know what's going to happen going into the weekend. And that was sort of best exemplified by the qualifying session. So I loved how close it was. And, you know, hopefully that will, you know, keep going for the rest of the season. But obviously different tracks, upgrades throughout the season. It could, you know, who knows, it could all peter out. But let's just enjoy it for the moment, I think.
Yeah. It's a weird one, because you really want a great season on one hand. But on the other hand, I'm a bit gutted that this season's turned out to be the good one and it's the last year of these regulations. It always happens, I swear. You get into the final year of regulations and suddenly things get really interesting. But hey-ho, hopefully it just continues to get better in 2022.
Keep those fingers crossed. But onwards to Portimao in a couple of weeks. We'll very much look forward to it. Finlay, thank you very, very much for joining me this morning.
Yeah, no worries. Good fun. And yeah, to everyone listening, be sure to check out the website, planetf1.com, in the 2 weeks between the races. Follow us on Twitter, @planet_F1. And yeah, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed it. And yeah, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Unfortunately.
Looking for the sexiest new job? Or maybe the techiest? Or the chefiest? Or perhaps the salesiest? We have them all and more on Ireland's jobsiest job site, jobs.ie, where 90% of jobs advertised end in a hire, so it's the savviest place to search too. With smart technology that matches your CV with the career you're looking for, just register today and download our app to find your dreamiest job. Jobs.ie, the jobsiest job site. Sports Social Podcast Network.